Aftershocks by Andrew James. Chapter 4, 1984. The first house I ever really remember living in was in a small town in central Illinois. Of all the places I can say I am from, England, Amsterdam, Australia, Japan, Morton, Illinois was perhaps the humblest of those worlds I hailed from as a child. Maybe it was a good place to begin a life for those with the intention of never leaving, but I believe the fact that to me it was simply a starting point has always been to my detriment. At least early on in one's life, the limitation a small town like that places on a young boy can be quite upsetting when the shock of leaving for a larger, more exposed city sinks in. I am reminded of Plato's cave allegory, in which those shackled to the cave wall are stupefied to discover the life outside resembles nothing of what they imagined. No matter where I went or how far away I traveled from that first home, it has remained a foundation for me that I have all but forgotten. It is only in my whimsical appreciation for cornfields and tidy little streets and large trees hanging over small roads and little narrow shops with narrow doors that any semblance of that starter life still remains. It was to me a large house with an English style to it that made it unique on our block. A block that was the very definition of picturesque small-town life. I remember the sense of it being a long, sunny street with houses as far as my young eyes could see. At the end of the road was the main road leading through the town. At first, this was the imposed border of my exploration, but as my time there grew, the limits of my exploration grew with it. Eventually, I was allowed past the end of that road to all of the roads beyond, and with that came adventure. There were roads here that led to small cornfields with perfect rows of clipped corn that were just far enough apart to allow a bike to be ridden through, until the realization that the irrigated mud below was too deep for my small tires to take, and the corn leaves themselves were viciously sharp and cut into exposed arms and legs with ease. There was a long, low, brown motel whose parking lot held Camaros and Pontiacs, with fuzzy dice hanging from the mirror and rough and faded leather seats upon which sat cartons of cigarettes. I would ride my bike from one to the other, looking in the windows at the speedometers, and imagining how fast they would go and how easy it would be to drive down the old dirt roads of the town, between the barns and farmhouses, until eventually I was free of the small city and nothing was in front of me but a dream. There was a small convenience store where I would spend my weekly allotment of 75 cents on baseball cards. Tops were the best if you wanted the gum, but they had the worst pictures, and so, if I wanted Fleer, the best brand, I needed to save my allowance for next week and forgo the gum. I collected them in sheets in a giant album and sat with the neighborhood kids outside on the curb and hastily placed each card into its protective sheath to fill the book. There is a house I lived in before this, though I have very little memory of it. It was the one I left when I began my real life as a nomad, and I believe that I have cast that memory of home from my mind along with the life I would have lived. The house had been in England where I had first been born to a mother and a man that, once again, was simply called father, but who lacked any of the attention to the detail of the word that would have given it credibility. He had been a tall man, a commercial artist, I have been told, or at least I remember that being his title. I do not know much of him, as he was gone before my memories begin. He was franchising himself around England, offering his services as a husband and as a father, and when each new franchise took off, he would leave the old without so much as a backwards glance or an alimony payment. And so he left my mother for another woman when I was only 2 years old, and began a new family somewhere else. He left me with only the gift of my height and my art, both of which I greatly appreciate, and because of his departure I was able to avoid what would have been his terrible influences of deceit upon me, which I also greatly appreciate. My mother, who was young and beautiful with blonde hair and a Hollywood smile that granted her limitless unrealized potential, worked as a bank teller upon my father's departure, and I assumed to pass the time until she could find a more suitable opportunity for herself and for me. That opportunity presented itself when a friend of hers responded to a news article classified looking for a couple dates to accompany two young American businessmen out for an evening, a method of dating that I have been assured was much more condoned in its time than it would be now. I imagine the entire scene like a 50s movie in which a fellow teller woman nudges my mother's elbow at her small bank window and passes her a folded newspaper with one ad circled in giant red marker, accompanying with a sly wink and a nod. My mother, who, of course, was proper and classy, would have demurely refused the offer, but her spirited, more sociable friend, who was always chewing gum and wore garish red lipstick, would have convinced her otherwise. In the end, the date happened, and my mother, who had originally been intended for the author of the classified advertisement, found that my soon-to-be father, a more deserving title I cannot imagine, was a much more practical choice, and thus their courtship began. There is a picture of their wedding day on the mantle in her home now, surrounded by a black and gold frame that is the same frame the picture was originally placed in, and in it I can see a beautiful summer day in England. On either side of my smiling mother and father are the hints of a crowd cheering and throwing white petals that get caught in hair and which you find huddled in small areas of your car weeks later. My father's great mustached face was tucked upward by a tight shirt collar that is more creamed than white. I stand between them both hugging my mother's leg with a smile of my own that seems to convey a certain sense of ownership to the event, as though I had been the mastermind of its creation. A condition of their matrimony was a return to where my father had first begun his career, and dutifully my mother and I joined him. My mother, who had never left England before then, was suddenly uprooted from the family and culture she had known all her life, and transported to this small, Midwestern town with cornfields and farm equipment. She was not happy about the change. She wilted under the Midwestern sun and faded in the uncouth environment of farmtown life. To say she despised it would not cover the large swath of emotions that my mother experienced in this first of many moves. Her temperament turned to bitter resentment, and her mood shifted to sullen and anguished, as though she had become a prisoner in this new world, which left my father to play the reluctant role of prison warden. At first, he alone took the brunt of her wrath. Great screaming matches would occur, and huge arguments with door slamming and dish breaking would sound from outside of my room. I would hide there with my door closed and dream of running away. At times I would even pack bags full of my toys, remote-controlled cars and Hot Wheels and stuffed animals, all quickly piled into bags along with my plans to live on the street. I could sell my toys to make money for food. Sometimes I would sneak out of the house and flee as far away as I could go, often to the very edge of our backyard where a small lake met the property line. I would hide there, behind the mass of a great oak tree that rose up from the edge, and wait for the fights to end. Once, I remember, after a particularly bad fight, my mom grabbing me and force-walking me out of the door, asking me if I wanted to go to McDonald's. I did, but only if Dad was coming. She quickly let me go and deposited me back in my room. I snuck out shortly afterwards and fled to my usual hiding spot at the end of the yard, only to return later to find my bags had been unpacked and returned to the top of the closet shelf, where I could no longer reach them. Later, when my mother sat on my bed beside me and my father stood in the doorway, their faces long and somber, they had asked me with obvious concern why I had packed my bags full of toys. I told them it was a more tidy way to store my toys, and it created less clutter for the room. I never packed my bags again, but the fighting continued. I'm sure they were not as frequent as I remember them being, but as a child, it felt like warfare. It wasn't long before we returned to England, my father's company once more sending him back to complete the project there, which he had started several years earlier. I remember little of this time, and the back and forth between the two homes at that early age confuses my memories and timeline. I remember only that I attended school in both locations, both Morton, Illinois, and a location in England, where I struggled desperately to fit in. Once back in England, only now with an American accent and an international mindset, I was poorly prepared to enter a school environment that demanded conformity. I remember a large gray building set on stilts and a classroom with a teacher that never liked me and would correct me incessantly on my pronunciation of words that sounded right to me but that she insisted I was saying incorrectly. I remember at this time I began to grow distant from the other children. There was something that I could not define that told me I was not one of them and never would be. This infuriated and confused me, and so I began a daily quest to make myself as much a part of their world as possible. I remember seeking approval constantly, and I would force myself to assume a voice and a style that felt foreign to me. I remember also that my mother seemed happier here, though I do not remember why exactly I was aware of this. I do not remember the same fighting and arguing occurring, which signals that the relocating home for her had been a boon to our small family. We spent weekends with her brothers and sisters, and it was during this time that I remember some of the bright and comfortable moments of my early years. It was, of course, not meant to last, and we soon found our way back to Morton once more. At this time, I was 7 years old, and I would spend the next 2 years once again trying to fit back into a world I had just forced myself to forget.